This is The Takeaway. I'm John Hockenberry. You know, some of nature's most radical and wonderful designs can be found in coral reefs. The balanced habitat of stationary creatures, mobile vertebrates swimming around, brilliant colors, all part of the adaptive properties of nature to make camouflage, to avoid predators, to attract mates. But coral reefs are threatened around the world. And Amina Khan, a science writer at the LA Times, says humans are losing a major source of design inspiration when biodiversity shrinks. What does that tell us?
There's a lot of scientists who get a little upset when we attribute a little bit too much intentionality to biology. But, I mean, the truth is, I mean, biology has basically had 4 billion years to sort of work on levels that we're just starting to work on. Like, if you think about nanotechnology, I mean, literally nature has been working at that, I mean, since it started, right, at the molecular level. The basic tenets of physics and chemistry and the more complex versions that we're exploring today with our technology, I mean, nature's been working on all that stuff for billions upon billions of years.
And while engineers and planners often think of flexibility as an afterthought, nature's actually really good at building flexibility into a design.
Oh, yeah, totally, because, you know, nature has no choice, right? Unlike us, I mean, we've had the ability and the privilege of basically creating our environments in the image that we want them. And we haven't really fully understood the consequences of that because we've been able to shield ourselves from those consequences.
What do termites teach us?
The interesting thing about them is they manage to regulate their internal environment without requiring air conditioning, unlike a lot of the buildings that we create. And so there's some scientists, including Scott Turner, who's from New York and really, really interesting scientist, thinking about how do we create these buildings that actually act more like interfaces with their environment and don't require all the high-powered AC or heating that we as humans do. Because if you could do that, then you could actually reduce the energy burden of cities by a lot.
Have planners actually been taking some of these ideas and putting them into practice? I'm thinking of some of what you found in the Pacific Northwest.
In Seattle, there are some consultants there who are looking for ways to try and create a built environment that works a little bit more like the environment around it. I mean, we pave everything over with concrete and asphalt. We like live in these buildings that are like completely, like I said before, cut off from their environment. And that's not the way that the natural environment works. So when you think about trees and you think about the soil that they hold down, like in a forest, for example, water will actually sink down into the soil and it actually gets purified along with being stored there, thanks in part to the trees and the taproot system and, you know, the fungal system and all of that. So there's water that's stored and purified and it eventually gets released back into the environment one way or another. When you think about cities, you've got all this storm water that's running off into these dirty streets, picking up all these toxins, all these pollutants. If you're lucky and you have a good drainage system, then it ends up getting sent back into our large bodies of water with tons of toxins in them. It's just, and it ends up not getting back into the water table, the natural water table, which is where it really ought to be. So these consultants are thinking about ways to like incorporate sort of materials that act a little bit more like mushrooms, mycelium, like the sort of network of fibers that can help and store that water as well. Because if you were to create surfaces, if you create them more like interfaces, then they're actually doing work for you. And part of that work is doing what the normal ecosystem would do, which is instead of letting the water just run off and gather all this garbage, it sinks back in, it's purified, it's stored, and it's maybe later released and evaporated at a rate that a forest would do. And the sooner that we do that, the sooner that we start creating these built environments that actually work more like natural environments, the better it will be for us as humans and the better it will be for the environment in which we live because we won't be putting such a tax on it.
Amina Khan is a science writer at the Los Angeles Times and author of Adapt, How Humans Are Tapping Into Nature's Secrets to Design and Build a Better Future. See you in the termite tower.
See you there.
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here? And maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.